Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Coaching Podcast from British Canoeing Awarding Body.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the British Canoeing Awarding Body Coaching Podcast. As you probably already know, that my name's Lee Pooley, and I'm the Director of Coaching and Qualifications. Today, we're going to focus on how we go about approaching full-day trips and extended adventures, you know, such as overnight camps, etc., and how we introduce novices to this particular area and look around, you know, around hydration and nutrition. And I am absolutely delighted to be joined by Dave. Dave, thanks very much for giving up your time. It's one of these things, isn't it? You're very busy. I know you're very busy in terms. And a bit of an introduction, really, on, you know, a bit of background so the listeners to sort of understand where you're coming from, if that's okay.
I'm Dave James Senior, not to be mistaken with Dave James Junior. I've been paddling for about 52 years. I started off playing polo in Luton for Luton Tigers. I progressed into canoe slalom, where I paddled C1 slalom and had the privilege of representing the country. Time's gone on. I'm now a British Canoeing Awarding Body provider, as you said, of a number of awards, and I'm a national trainer for a number of the awards as well. And my heart is in open boating and expeditioning.
Well, that's good then, isn't it? Because that's what we're going to talk about today, Dave. Where's home now?
So home's just outside Hereford. So I'm right on the border between England and Wales in Hereford.
And the local run?
So obviously we've got the Y, which is very local to us, but I tend to go into Wales and the middle Y and the Usk when it's open. They're my playgrounds.
Well, I'm sure we'll delve in further to some of your adventures anyway, and you'll probably make reference to some of the journeys and adventures you've had over the 52 years of paddling. As you know, one of the attractions to paddle sport is full-day trips and overnight expeditions and adventures. But what we're really interested, really, is if you're working with, you know, someone that's relatively new to paddle sport that comes to you and says, I really want to be able to get in my boat, whatever craft it is, and I want to do full-day trips. That's what I really want to do. How do you go about setting up almost like a training package or, you know, sessions for those individuals?
Well, somebody coming and asking and being that focused on what they want to do is a dream for a coach. Is somebody that's got the end goal. That's a dream, really. So it's about sitting down with them and establishing expectations. What do they want to do? Is it a challenge? Is it for fun? What is the purposes of their journey? What do they want to do? And then we'll sit down and set some goals, agree some goals and some milestones, and look at it from there. I have done this a few times with people coming to me wanting to do this type of thing. And I must admit, I've used the Personal Performance Award Touring Award to hang it off of, because that covers all of the areas. And I've found for myself that's really good for us to check progress. And it gives the learner the opportunity to design the sessions, because they know all the bits we've got to cover and they can start asking those questions. And I think particularly with touring and day trips, there is as much off the water to learn as on the water. So making sure that I'm covering those off the water bits as well with, I'm not going to call it homework, but just posing questions for the next session where they can go off and do that little bit of research and grow themselves, really.
Mm. And what do you think? Are there some logical steps? Because you talk about, you know, there is much off the water as on the water. Are there some logical steps that do you have to do something before you do the next topic?
They've obviously got to become relatively proficient in their craft. And they've got to choose their craft, and they've got to choose the craft for the trip that they want to do. Mm-hmm. I think that's important. And then start building up that effective and efficient paddling, and then progressing it from there, really, and letting it find its own route, mm-hmm. if you like. And on the sessions that we'll do once we've got the paddling going, we'd start doing the coaching via journeys, and start introducing journeys. And a lot of those questions, a lot of that learning will naturally come out from just doing the journeys, because that's what they're looking to do.
And I would imagine from my, you know, my background as a coach and someone that's explored as a privilege as part of my job is decision making. Decision making is absolutely crucial, isn't it? And, you know, is that something you hold back on? Whereabouts do you start the decision making process or hand in the decision making process over?
Right at the beginning. Okay, right at that beginning where we are setting and agreeing those goals and those milestones, that the learner is, that the person that's there is starting to make those decisions about what we're going to do. And if you look at what Turing Award is, it's an award designed to develop your ability to apply appropriate decision-making skills for an enjoyable and safe day's touring. Mm-hmm. And that's what it says on the tin. It's them making those decisions, and we are just giving those the bits of information that they can call upon to make sound, safe decisions.
Okay, so really sort of at the very early stages, you're doing decision making, you're adding these sequences in, you're building up on it. Over the years of doing trips, there are some significant physical and psychological demands when you're on the water. And actually, how do you go about as a coach? I mean, you're highly experienced. How do you go about as a coach introducing such demands?
When we are teaching the basic level of the paddling, we've got those fundamentals. Mm. And I think when we are looking at touring, we've got to go back to those four fundamentals: the active posture, the connectivity, power transfer, and the feel. And I think that particularly in touring, the feel and how that person feels in the craft is really important. They've got to feel safe, secure. If they're always feeling wobbly, they're not going to enjoy their trip. They can't relax into it. And that has, I think, has a really big psychological impact. And if we can get them with a good active posture, using their whole body to paddle, and we've got that good power transfer from the face of the blade to the hull of the boat, so all the effort they're putting in is being positive, it's going to be easier for them. And I think that also comes down then to the selection of the craft that we're using for touring. Mm. If we were to use a play boat, we're going to struggle to keep it in a straight line. We're pushing a lot of water down the river. Where if we go to a touring kayak, okay, it was going to cut through the water. We've got some stability and it's going to tend to go in a straight line. So it's about mixing all of that. And as coaches, we use TTPPEE. So technical, tactical, physical, psychological. But I think the EE that we don't always use on our coaching is quite important for in a touring environment. And that's understanding the environment and how the environment can change out through the day, the water conditions will change. And the equipment that we are not just paddling, that we're choosing to take. And some of that is some of the biggest decisions that we're going to make when we're touring.
Yeah. Anecdotally, what we've heard over the years, and I'm sure you've heard of it, is that people that go paddling bite off more than they can chew initially, and they just get put off by it. It's almost building up to those longer trips, but really enjoying the shorter trips as you progress.
Yeah, and it's those shorter trips and increasing the intensity, those bits and pieces. And I think it's about having those courageous conversations with people where they are maybe got this vision in their head of a trip that they want to do. And as a coach, we look at it, we've probably done the trip or we understand the trip. And it's maybe a little bit about expectation management, and maybe you need to draw them back a little bit, because I'm a real firm believer, if we're going to send people out there, they've got to go out and they've got to enjoy it, because that's why we do the paddling. But I also think it's really important to remember that the craft is just the vehicle. It's not the adventure. The adventure could be being out in nature, the peace and quiet, exploration, whatever it is. But the canoe, kayak, boards, whatever, is just the vehicle to enable that adventure.
Yeah, just listening to you there, you know, you're listing off the aspects of our enjoyment. And one big part of what I enjoy about adventures and exploration is the planning. And interestingly, during an adventure, an example would be when I was in Greenland last, is we're already planning the next trip. And that's a good indication that trip's going well. I don't know if you've had those.
Yeah, I'll give an example from, it wasn't yesterday, it was Monday. We were doing a paddle sport tour and leader training. And we were sat in a pub after the day on the reservoir, and we were looking at navigation and trip planning. And this group, they just got so into the planning. And you could see that there were definitely a couple of individuals there that the planning of the trip was probably bigger for them than actually doing the trip. And they loved that logistical side and putting it all together. It's creative at the end of the day, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's mountaineering on the water.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. Yeah. We've got some great resources out there as well to help us do this planning. Mm. And I don't think we should forget that. Mm.
So four-day trips, multi-day expeditions, a big part of it is that we're just not popping out for the hour. It's not a quick run down our local whitewater river. And hydration and nutrition is absolutely crucial, isn't it? You know, and it's such an important aspect. But yet again, it's probably that topic that you talked about off the water. So could you give some sort of, you know, from a four-day trip, maybe to multi-day trips, you know, how do you go about introducing those concepts? Because there is a, you know, in colder weather, there's a requirement to have more calories. There's an importance for hydration. Coaches are probably one of the worst for hydration because we're getting so carried away with what we're doing, we forget to drink ourselves. So it'd be really interesting to get your view on that and how you put that subject across.
Okay, so as you said, the hydration and nutrition, really important. And I always break it down into three phases. There's fueling, refueling, and replenishing, which is after. So the fueling, this is before the event. They say that we are fueling our body 2 hours before the activity and further back. And this is carbohydrates, and we need to be avoiding saturated fats because that stops that process there. The pit stops during, which is the refueling. The real big one here is the hydration. Okay. And I'll give some examples of that in a minute. But interestingly, I found a fact that it's recommended that while we're paddling, we should take 50 to 100 calories on per half. So that's sort of just really saying that we should be grazing the whole time rather than having full meals particularly. And raisins and bananas are great things for that. Mm. The replenishing at the end, as we know, we've got that 20 minutes to 60 minutes after an event where our muscles can collect and store the carbohydrates to aid its recovery. Okay, so things like water with orange juice in it is a really great thing. Not very pleasant, but it's a great way of putting that into your body. And then after that 2 hours has gone, after the hour has gone, we're going into the 2 hours, it's a case of really getting some protein into us so we can repair the muscles. On a multi-day trip, I will plan the trip, have a look at what's needed, and I will plan the menu to fuel the trips. And also about planning that menu, if we've got a short day, then we can spend some time in the evening cooking. But if we've got a really hard day, we just want something really quick and effective to get inside us, to get into our pits and start that recovery for the next day.
It's interesting you say about that. Where do you carry that stuff? Is it in your buoyancy aid? Is it, you know, is it in a day bag? There has been talk around hydration packs, you know, in the back of your buoyancy aid. But there has also been talk about, well, you don't actually know how much fluid they're taking on because you can't see it. So, you know, how do you go about that area?
So the craft that we're taking definitely affects what we're going to carry. A whitewater kayak on a whitewater kayaking day, we've got very little space. In my open boat, it's not a trip if I haven't got my Kelly kettle and my Dutch oven with me, I'm afraid. Let's put things into perspective here. But interestingly, knowing I was going to do this, I sent a message out yesterday morning to a number of friends of mine and said, what's your go-tos? And I've got some really interesting bits and pieces here that will bring out the bits about the hydration, as you've said. Mm-hmm. So one of the people I asked was Jenna Saunders, and her go-to is soup. But she did put the caveat there, not packet soup.
Okay.
And then in the summer, she's definitely hummus and rice cakes. I'm not casting any judgment on any of these. Okay. Please. So I also asked Ken Hughes, and Ken said that his go-to during the winter is a homemade vegetable soup with a tin of tuna in it.
Okay.
Yep. And in the summer, he will go for tuna and coleslaw, but he makes the point of no wheat, no gluten, very limited or no carbs during the day, black tea and water. I think he's, you know, he's definitely at the other end. I asked Chris Brain, and Chris said that he likes to eat on the go. When he's paddling properly, he likes to eat on the go rather than stopping and having a proper lunch break. And as we all know, Chris likes his malt loaf cakes. And I think there's a podcast all in its own about how many little soaring bars he can get into the pocket of his buoyancy aid. But he also says that he's not averse to those meal replacement bars as well when he's paddling. But he does make a really interesting point as well, that he feels that when the paddling is the most important thing, the food is for fuel. But when we've got the time, the food is for being sociable. And I thought that's a really, really good point he made there. So I asked Andy Orton, and I'm down with Andy Orton, I must admit. We're talking flapjack, cheese and salad wraps, and more flapjack. Robson says that he doesn't eat an awful lot during the day, but he's definitely one that will look at loading his body and fueling his body in the morning. So he's definitely eggs on toast, oats and yogurt for him. And he's stopping with us this weekend, so I've got to go shopping to make sure I've got plenty of eggs in for him. But the point he made, which was interesting, that when we're paddling, our hands are full. And when our hands are full, we often forget to drink. I'd never really thought of that particularly in that way. Emmy McLeod, she's another hummus and oat cakes person. Junior, my son, again, he was very much about storing in his buoyancy aid, grazing through the day, but making sure that he's fueled from the day before. But he also made a point that he always keeps a little bit of an energy gel or something in his buoyancy aid for the end of the day, when you need that boost, when you've just done that last rescue of the day or something, you just need that bit of a boost and a pickup. So I thought there's some interesting bits and pieces there. But one of the things, apart from Chris's comment, was a lot of that is around performance paddling. And we don't all go out to perform when we're paddling. A lot of us go out to have fun. And I've got a couple of examples of that. And one is a friend of mine. She has become a friend. She was started off as a client, and she did a great blend trip with us. And we were paddling down Loch Ness on a particularly horrendous day, and we stopped for a snack, and I lit a fire, and I cooked some bacon rolls. And Harriet said that it wasn't performance food, it was definitely morale food. And it was probably the best bacon roll that she'd ever had and likely to ever have.
Yeah.
I've also done a trip with Shropshire paddlers, Sean and Bill, doing their guide endorsement observation. And we stopped for lunch, and lunch came out, and it came out of every boat, every craft. And I've never seen so much food in my life. And they just sit there and they're chatting and they're sociable. And I honestly think that we paddled to go for lunch, and then we paddled back again after lunch, because the lunch was the main part of the trip. And I thought that was lovely as well. So we fuel for the trip, whether it's a challenge or fun and enjoyment and a chill.
Yeah. I think that goes back to one of your first comments, Dave, is you talk about the motivations of the individuals and why people paddle. And I think that's really important. The social setting, I'm just thinking about some of the trips that I've done, is, you know, some of the best times have been sat on the beach with an open fire, chatting whilst food is cooking, and thinking about the day and also thinking about the next day. And you know, one of the things probably is good to sort of talk about and get your view on as well is a lot of, you know, you gave some examples, not all of them, but some examples were eating on the go. But we also need to be really conscious, especially in where we currently are, and unfortunately, that some of the water conditions aren't that great. So, you know, what would your advice be about eating and ensuring that you stay healthy, especially for an extended trip?
Yeah, so extended trips, particularly, again, I'm doing a lot of open boating stuff, making sure that the food that I'm taking is in barrels or in bags and not being contaminated. And I'm also a great fan of wet meals, the sachet meals that have already, rather than dehydrated meals. My concern with dehydrated meals, particularly if I'm abroad or some sketchy areas, that I'm potentially introducing contaminants to my food, where when I've got a ready-made pack that I've just reheated, I can be fairly assured that there's no contaminants in there. And again, it's about hygiene, but basic hygiene. I'm not a great fan of hand gels and bits and pieces, but they definitely have their place. And wipes, wet wipes and everything, as long as we're disposing of them effectively and everything. And I think the big thing is we see it an awful lot in open boating, where somebody has got their water bottle and it's just rolling around in the bottom of their boat. They take the cap off, they drink it, and we don't know what's gone on it. So it's maybe just being really aware. And I think it's an awareness of the environment that you're in. And when we're going out and we're purchasing these things, we can get them with caps on, which is going over the drinking thing, and maybe considering those to eliminate the contaminants.
Yeah. I don't know what your views or your approaches are. Is sometimes, you know, on trips that you have limited water that you can carry, you know, do you delve into the purification? Is it iodine tablets, or is it boiling it to an inch of its life? What do you do?
So I've tried them all, and I think a great bit of kit is a Milbank bag, which takes out a lot of the contamination, and then probably a rolling boil for a lot of what I'm doing. But on a lot of my trips, I'm cooking on open fires. So to keep water on a rolling boil takes a lot of fuel. So if you're taking a lightweight stove, then we maybe need to be going down some other routes of a better purification system and filtration system, or iodine tablets. But you can never get rid of the taste of that iodine tablet, can you? You know, it's a fine line between being ill and the iodine, I'm afraid. It's about really being aware of it and collecting the water where it is most likely to be the cleanest and less contaminated as we can go, if we can.
Yeah. Well, we started really delving into the overnight, the camping. And what comes with camping, as everyone knows, doesn't matter how lightweight you might go, same as that iodine, isn't it? You can go extremely lightweight and be uncomfortable, or you can go, you know, go a bit more and be comfortable. But whatever you do in terms of camping becomes more equipment, making the craft lower. It makes it heavier in the water. So how do you, as a coach, introduce efficiency to traveling with such a loaded craft for multi-day trips?
I think one of the things is getting the participants to bring the kit they're going to take. It's a little bit like that Hudson Bay start. We're going to try it all before, you know, before the big day, and look at how they are going to load their boat for trim, particularly whitewater kayaking. There isn't a lot of room in the front of the boat, so we tend to put the weight in the back of the kayak, and that massively changes the way that kayak will perform. It does with our open boats as well, but I think with our open boats we're far more aware of trim, and we move the weight around. It's the safety side of it which concerns me with the loaded boats, and it's that manual handling, and it's that manual handling with the boat and the equipment on the bank, from loading our boat on a steep bank. And once we've got the loading in the boat, even things like the boat turning, it's got more inertia, and everything happening is that little bit heavier and harder. And practicing with loaded boats and what you're going to take is really, really important. Mm-hmm. Is so you know what you're going to do. I don't know if you remember, but we're going back a long way now to canoeing down Everest with Mike Jones's expedition. The last 2 days of the expedition, they went without any bank support. So they had to carry stoves and food and everything. And that was one of the comments that they made, was how differently, I hope it's a signed copy. There you go.
It's a great book. I totally recommend it. Now you've just talked about it.
Yeah, I don't know if you know, but the person that dealt with the logistic and the catering for that was John Gosling. Mm. And John Gosling, he at the time he'd worked for British Rail, and he put all the food together. And having chatted to him after that event, was the selection of the food, was he was obviously trying to balance the diet for them, but was also having to be really, really conscious of the weight, because they didn't have that many Sherpas, and he had to get the right food because he knew the six paddlers he had would give him all the stick in the world if he didn't produce a meal that they could eat.
Mm.
It's loaded boats are different.
Yeah, it's a great book, isn't it? Canoeing Down Everest by Mike Jones. And yet I am pleased it is a signed copy. There's another book that I think is a really interesting, because it goes into less about it's committed and commitment and open crossings by Bill Taylor.
Yeah,
that yet again goes into similar sort of areas of that. Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? You talk about the manual handling, and when people arrive or they're keen to get on the water, so they try to carry everything down to the shoreline with, you know, in one go, or when they arrive at the area to camp, they try to get it all up. It's really important, isn't it, as coaches and leaders and guides, that we actually demonstrate that behavior of actually, it's okay to do several trips. It's okay that we help each other, and building that up in the training is vital, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm a massive advocate for independence in paddling. You know, we should be, you know, as much as we can make people independent, but it's teamwork. An expedition and a day trip is about teamwork, working together. Obviously, unless we're on a solo expedition, it's teamwork, working together. And we've been on expeditions, I'm sure you have as well, where we have a set routine. When we get into a routine on a multi-day trip, we land. My go-to is I put a tarp up, even if it's not raining, whatever. I put a tarp up, it gives me a focus. And then the next thing is the Kelly kettle goes on so I can have a brew. Because once you've had a brew, the whole world's better, isn't it? Everything can be done there. And it's just that slowing down. If I go back to my fire service career, most of the accidents that happened on fire grounds was after the fire was extinguished, because everybody lowers their guard. Yeah. And they relax. And I think it's the same when we're paddling. We've got off the water, we've done the dangerous bit, we're just making camp now. Well, actually, this is the dangerous bit, where we are unloading our boats. And that's where we can pull muscles and trip slips and falls and the like. And that's a bit about management, isn't it? And self-management.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been great, Dave, to get your insight and your experience into multi-day trips. And for anyone that's listening, they do know that I tend to throw in a couple of questions at the end. So what's the five items that you ensure that you pack when you're going on a multi-day trip? Five items only.
A tarp.
Okay.
My Kelly kettle. Does plenty of milk and tea go as one of the five, or does that go with the Kelly jug?
Absolutely. Yeah, that can be a third one.
Some good food. I always like to take nice fresh food. Then for me, it's either going to be plenty of films downloaded onto my phone, or a nice book to read, to sit by the river and just chill.
Lovely. Last question, I promise, Dave, then I'll let you go. What does the next 6 months look like for you? And when's your next big trip, and what is it?
Okay, so I had a big trip planned, but the weather stopped us from doing it. My next big trip is going to be with my son, David. And it comes from something that Ray Goodwin said at the symposium about how special it was to go paddling with his daughter, Mia. And I'm in the fortunate position of, like David, he's not a bad paddler, and going out and getting some adventures done with him to make some memories, really. Where we're going to go, I don't know. If it's with him, we'll probably be carrying our boats a long way, but that's the way he does. The next 6 months, a variety, really. We've got quite a few courses that we're putting on. I've got a lot of individual coaching bits and pieces, both Sarah and myself. We've got some great DV trips coming up, and we do a lot of DV work, which I love seeing young people getting out there and doing it. And then we're going into the autumn with our Scottish expeditions that I love. And we do those as DIY expeditions. So we support people rather than provide everything. Yeah. So they provide the food and we just support them. And we found those really, really good, because that's developing that independent paddler. And I think we're actually not doing ourselves any favours, really, because we're teaching our clientele that they don't need us. But it's the right thing to do.
Exactly what coaching is about. It's working towards redundancy.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, thanks very much for your time. Much appreciated, and really thoroughly enjoyed talking to you and sharing some thoughts around it. Last, I'm very much with Chris Brain. I am a soaring person as well. Yeah. Anyway, thanks very much and take care.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. We hope you'll join us for the next episode. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe. Bye for now.